Earlier today, President Obama addressed the nation for the first time since the downgrade by Standard & Poor's of U.S. credit.
Markets will rise and fall, but this is the United States of America. No matter what some agency may say, we've always been and always will be a AAA country.
In a piece in Sunday's New York Times, Drew Weston argued that in tumultuous times, the American people look to the leaders to tell stories that orient us to what is, what could be, and what should be. Unlike some of his predecessors, Weston argues this president's messages have been devoid of stories and of villains. That, with a consistent message of bipartisanship over the message of confrontation, President Obama stared into the eyes of history and chose to avert his gaze. Well, if you've been disappointed by the president since his election, what does he need to do to win you back? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Drew Weston joins us from member station WBUR in Boston. He's a professor of psychology at Emory University. His latest book is The Political Brain, and nice to have you with us today.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
And did you get a chance to hear the president's statement earlier today?
No, I'm afraid I missed it other than just a few clips here and there.
It's interesting. The president called for common sense and compromise, exactly the kinds of things that you criticized him for.
Yeah, you know, he's been calling for that for about 2.5 years, and it looks like the Dow just keeps plummeting, and our manufacturing base keeps dwindling, and jobs keep going away, and it hasn't seemed to, I guess as Sarah Palin would say, much as I'm not fond of quoting Sarah Palin, has that hopey changing thing working out for you, and it's not working out terribly well for most Americans.
And this is a product of the president's rhetoric, or is it a product of basic economic problems?
Well, you know, it's a mix of things. If you think about what the American people really asked him to do when they brought him on as president, they gave him a full Democratic House, full Democratic Senate. They basically said, "Do whatever you have to do to save us. We're scared. We're angry." The Dow had dropped over by half. We were losing 750,000 jobs a month. And they would have gone wherever he led if he led. But instead, he basically did what the Republicans, I think, have aptly called leading from the rear. He basically said, "Well, I'll tell you what. Let me split the difference between the bankers and between the people whose homes they're taking. Let me split the difference between the Republicans' ideas, which haven't worked for the last 8 years, and the Democrats." And the result was that we ended up with bankers making big bonuses while they're foreclosing people's homes, and we ended up with a half a stimulus that half stimulated the economy.
The president might have said that what he did was move to the middle, that the best ideas were not exclusively Democratic ideas.
Well, you know, we had just tried out the Republican ideas for 8 years, and they had been about as colossal failures as you could possibly ask for. And if you think about, you know, there's an electoral philosophy behind that, but there's not a vision. And the electoral philosophy is, if I just move to the middle, I'll get people in the middle with me. And I do a lot of work on as a consultant, measuring how people respond to different things, how American voters respond. And the striking thing is that people in the center actually don't want to hear centrist messages. What they want to hear is someone who speaks honestly to them and someone who says, "Look, I'm going to help you figure out how to solve some problems we all have." And if you think about the presidents who've done that and who have realigned the electorate, they haven't been the most centrist presidents. They've actually been the two in the last century were Franklin Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan.
And neither seen as you're right, as centrist. Roosevelt seen as on the left wing of the Democratic Party, and Ronald Reagan a conservative figure.
Right, and both of them, you know, both of them brought so many independents over with them. I mean, I remember hearing my mom talk about how her dad lost his successful small business in the Great Depression. He was sweeping floors. He was doing anything that he could, and she, for the rest of her life, was a Roosevelt Democrat because he put food on her table. And she remembered opening that refrigerator door early on in the Depression. And her mother said, "I'm sorry, sweetie, we just don't have any food." And she remembers FDR as the guy who allowed her to have food in her stomach.
Well,
and that's what Americans were asking Barack Obama to do, and he just couldn't get himself to do it.
It's the nature of his character. He wants to bring people together. A uniter, that was a big part of his campaign.
Well, I think that's right. And I think he ran in retrospect, on two contradictory platforms, one of them being that he was going to be a uniter, and the other was that he was going to be a reformer. And we are at the most corrupt period of American history since the Great Depression. We have the greatest inequality that we've had since the Great Depression. We have the greatest influence of money on our senators and our congressmen that we've had since the Great Depression. And you can't do both of those things. You can't say to the bankers on Wall Street, "I'll tell you what, you just crashed the economy. You lost trillions of dollars of Americans' wealth. You threw 8 million people out of their jobs. But you know what? Let's split the difference. Be nice for a little while, and then you can have your bonuses back." That's what he did, and the average American is furious about it. And they're looking at the fact that at the end of every month, you know, they're trying to pay their bills, and they can't pay them if they still have a home to pay them in. And they're not too happy that these guys are getting big bonuses again.
Somebody might point out that American public was so furious, they elected a whole bunch of Republicans last November. not the progressives you're touting.
No, well, you know, I think the American people made, I mean, I say this as someone who works for progressive organizations, for nonprofits, and I've done a lot of presenting on Capitol Hill before both the House and Senate Democratic caucuses. So I'm telling you my biases up front.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the American people, in a funny way, made a good judgment. I mean, the judgment that they made. I mean, I don't like the judgment that they made. I think they elected a bunch of people who are even more dangerous than the people who they let go of. But I think what they were saying was, you know, we elected you guys to put us back to work. And where are the jobs programs? You know, we thought there'd be a WPA. Where is the WPA?
You know, really? You thought last November's results were a call for a WPA?
I think what the average American wanted back in 2009 when they were voting for Barack Obama and for all those Democrats was they were saying, just fix it. Do something so that I can get a job back, so that my unemployment insurance I can keep until I can get a job, so that I can feed my family again without having to worry that I can't fill my gas tank. That's what they were saying, and the Democrats didn't do it. They did not come through. And instead, you know, I mean, the health care bill was just left such a bad taste in people's mouths because they could see the corruption dripping off of it. You know, they could see how whoever got to sit in the 60th senator's chair got the extra $1 billion for their state, or they could see how the insurance industry, the reason we didn't have something so simple and obvious built in as allowing people, if they wanted to buy Medicare or Medicaid before they hit 65. Was because a deal had been struck privately with the insurance companies not to do it. And they really didn't like that.
We're talking with Drew Weston, a professor of psychology at Emory University. He wrote a piece in the New York Times yesterday, What Happened to Obama? There's a link to it at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. If you've become disappointed with the president, what does he need to do to win you back? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Jason's on the line calling from Rochester in New York.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Very interesting topic. It dovetails with a blog conversation I've been having on a website that's mostly trafficked by conservatives. And I think you're correct. I think a sort of narrative is needed. But what I definitely think Obama needs to do is to find a way to actually reach out to conservatives in the way that the public conservative wants to be addressed, and I think that is with a louder and louder voice and a firmer hand and a far less BS and no BS attitude, or for, you know, not taking any more BS. I think the conservatives in general, they're traditionalists. I think that they're more patriarchal in their worldview, and I think I think one of the reasons they always invoke Reagan is because they sort of felt him as a, you know, as a fatherly figure, a soft-spoken tough guy. And I think Obama is all soft-spoken, but he really, you know, let's put it this way. The conservatives like to point out that his full name is Barack Hussein Obama. I think Barack Obama needs to bring a little of that Hussein out and really deal with the conservatives the way they prefer to be dealt with.
Including lashing them as the villains?
I don't think they need to be lashed as a villain. I think what the country feels right now, the zeitgeist, is they just feel that Obama's too squishy. Let's put it this way. I think the softer he speaks, the more obnoxious the Tea Party gets. And the only way to wrangle them in is to start speaking more loudly and carrying a big stick at the same time.
All right. Thanks, Jason, for the call. Father figure, is that an appropriate characterization?
Do you know, I think Jason's comments were right on the mark, is that I think one of the things the president doesn't understand are bully dynamics, and that is that if you ever have been bullied, you know that the last thing you can possibly do with a bully is to try to be a supplicant, to try to say, oh, listen, hey, I can do this for you, I can do this for you, I can do this for you, because all that does is it makes the bully devalue and dismiss you and disrespect you more. And I remember a time growing up as a kid when another kid was pushing me around before school for about 3 weeks, and it was really wearing on me. And I went to my dad and I said, you know, Dad, what do I do? This kid, you know, if we get into a fight, he's probably going to kick my butt. And he said, you know what? You're going to get a bloody nose, but just make sure that you get one good shot in his face. And the reality was that I challenged him to a fight, and the next day we're playing basketball together. And I wish in many ways President Obama had a father who could have sat him down and said, son, when they try to push you around, the last thing you can do is to let them disrespect you.
We're talking on the Opinion Page with Drew Weston of Emory University and a piece that he wrote yesterday in the New York Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Matt on the line. Matt with us from CeeLo in North Carolina.
Yes, hi. I had a comment and a question. During the Bush administration, I had a mantra that I used to tell people, and that is that resolve in the service of terrible ideas is no virtue. And what I see in the public today is people voting against their own interests, really voting against their own common sense, but they're seeing people with resolve that are ruthless, that are controlling a narrative, and that strikes people in a positive way. And I think Obama is believing the polls, not the real polls, but Fox News polls. He's buying into this thing. I think there's a lot more people out there that want a different direction for this country. I think the Republicans and the conservatives have controlled the narrative to the point and been completely ruthless about it, in fact even lying about it and getting away with it because they have such resolve and such a purpose behind what they're saying, even though it's completely wrong. I think he needs to bring the same kind of ruthlessness and fight to the fight. Politics is not about bipartisanship. It would be great. It seems like he's looking forward to what the history books are going to say about how fair he was, but that's not what politics is about. If you truly believe in what you believe in, you have to fight for it, and that's what I think people want to see.
Well, Fox News doesn't use any polls that are any different from anybody else's. Their interpretation might be somewhat different than other people's, but it's the same polls. But getting more to his point, Drew Weston, has the president, by not controlling the narrative, ceded it, in your opinion?
I think he really has, and I think again your caller is right on the mark. Is that if you look at that, the average American, did they care primarily 2 years ago or now about the budget deficit or about jobs? The data are just as consistent as they can possibly be. They care about jobs, and you know, I could tell you some of the most popular messages I've ever tested that went across from all the way across the spectrum from Tea Partiers to as far left as we get in this country. The top one is probably I want to see the words "Made in America" again. A second one is we don't have a shortage of work ethic in this country. We have a shortage of work. And we need to be putting, if the private sector can't put people to work, then we got plenty of roads to build, we got plenty of levees to rebuild, and we got a country to rebuild. People hear that, and it doesn't matter whether they're right, whether they're left, whether they're center. They say, you know, you got this abstraction, the deficit. I've got bills to pay at the end of the month. Help me get a job. Isn't that what you're supposed to be doing? And the Congress and the president have united in saying, we're just really not that interested in what your concerns are. We're concerned about this.
Matt, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we go next to, this is John. John with us from San Francisco.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it seems to me that Mr. Weston is engaging a lot of magical thinking and scapegoating here. That, you know, we got a system of government where the president can't really move anything through Congress, and most of what he needs to do has to get through Congress. And the Republicans, both in the Senate and now in the House, have made just a blood oath to stop everything he's trying to do. So, you know, you look at the situations he's run into with foreign policy challenges with the Arab Spring, with so many things going on, and they're going to stop whatever he tries to do. And so to think that somehow or another he can wave his magic wand and get a jobs program through or get, some sort of, the Rooseveltian thing. Roosevelt had majorities in the Senate and Congress. He could get what he wanted. And, I think people have to look at the grand sweep of presidents we've had and say, this is the smartest and the best suited guy that progressives are ever going to see in the White House, and they better stick with him.
Well, that gets to the next question about the next election, which is compared to what? But, Drew Weston, we just have a few seconds left, but, hey, cut him a break.
I'll just put it an apostrophe on that last statement in a funny sort of way, and that is that President Obama had enormous majorities in the House and the Senate, he did everything you could possibly do to lose them, and he did that by he was told by all of a number of Nobel Prize winning economists. Including some on his own team. He had one of the world's experts on the New Deal right in his own Council of Economic Advisors, and he didn't follow their advice. He said instead, let me just compromise with the Republicans, and boy, FDR never would have done anything like that.
Drew Weston, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Drew Weston, author of The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Face of the Nation. You can find a link to his piece, What Happened to Obama, at our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, more on the economy. Don Peck will join us about the pinch that Americans have faced since the Great Recession. And stay tuned to NPR for continued coverage of the fiscal crisis. Dow Jones Industrial Average down more than 600 points. This is NPR News.